Welcome to the Heavy Snacking Podcast. This week our guest is David Ondero from Sunbrain, and this bike is a pipe bomb.
For every day that I spend here, there's a deeper thirst for wild soda.
Hello, hello, and it's a new week and a new episode of the Heavy Snacking Podcast. Summer is almost in full swing, and I am so stoked to bring you this week's episode with David Ondero. This is the first time I interviewed someone at a show, and since it was soundcheck, we did it out in my car. So without further ado, the Heavy Snacking Podcast is an interview podcast where we talk to touring musicians about their musical history, traveling, regional cuisine, and of course, snacks. We're exploring the world of fast food, gas station delicacies, local chains from around the country, and even the world. I'm your host, Alex Posca, snacking specialist, Topo Chico devotee, and Del Taco diehard. Every week, we will be talking to friends new and old about their favorite foods, best meals, and wild adventures on the road. And it's particularly important that I point out my love for Topo Chico in this episode because it comes up in a big way. So Topo Chico Corporate, if you hear this, please sponsor our podcast. We talk about you all the time, and I love to provide free Topo Chico for the guests. In this week's interview, you can hear the sounds of the city because this is a good old-fashioned tailgate interview. We recorded this sitting in the trunk of my car outside the Moroccan Lounge just before David played, opening up for Pedro the Lion. You can check out the podcast on Facebook or follow me on Twitter at HeavySnackingPC. And I'm currently working on a website that will be at HeavySnackingPodcast.pizza. No joke. So subscribe and tell a friend. Big thanks goes out to E for letting us use their song in the intro as usual. This week's guest is David Ondero. He's been named one of the greatest living songwriters by NPR and has a cult following that includes folks like Conor Oberst, David Bazan, and Nana Grizzle. I'm sure after hearing his songs, you'll understand where Conor Oberst from Bright Eyes got the confidence to sing the way Conor does. I caught up with David outside the Moroccan Lounge just before he played the second night in LA with Pedro the Lion. We talked about college house parties, DIY touring in the 90s, the dialer for free long-distance calls, and almost naming an album after my favorite sparkling water. We also talk about eating meat on 9/11, dumpster diving, and hatch green chiles in New Mexico. Please enjoy this episode. Mighty roar, it shakes the shacks, purple skies and orange moons. Plants are confident in June, humidity, it's thick. You can cut it with a knife if you like to take a breath here, honey. I'm gonna cut you out a slice. So I developed gills and I moved into the aquifer. Fell asleep in Wakulla Springs. Woke up down in Jupiter. Then I moved back to the land. High into an orange tree. It was set for life with citrus. But my body couldn't take this. Acidic. So I strolled down to Miami, tried to find myself some friends. Found myself in South Beach and I met some mannequins who smelled of coconuts and copper tone. Like those smells real well, but as far as conversations go, I guess that it stopped at the start of the smell. It was Elvis and Sinatra. Now where's your wallet, man? I gotcha. But now if you're poor like me, they let poor people like me be. They say that North Beach is a war zone, high-rise hotels hollowed out. But now we were living large. We were stepping out in some $30 beachfront motel down south of the south. South of the south, down in North Miami, south of the south. Me and my old lover Terry, south of the south. We were practically married. So I jumped my pogo stick. Cool. So, We're here at the Moroccan Lounge with David Dondero, legendary songwriter, touring musician. We're going to get in some questions here, but let's start with your early musical life. So when did you like first pick up guitar and decide to start playing in bands?
Well, it started as drums, and I started when I was 9 years old on drums. But that I was in a band until I was 12 on drums.
So where were you living at that time?
In New Jersey.
Okay, what part of New Jersey?
We were in Denville, New Jersey. Well, kind of between Dover and Denville, Route 10.
Is that like northern, southern?
Northern New Jersey.
I'm a West Coast boy.
Yeah, northern New Jersey is where we were.
Okay, home of the Boss.
True. That area. Yeah, the Boss. Yep. Well, he's a little south of there. He's down closer to the Jersey Shore. Yeah.
You seem to move around a lot. One of your early bands, Sunbrain, was down in South Carolina. So how'd you end up in South Carolina playing music?
I was going to college in Clemson University, and I met Sunbrain. Well, we formed there through the radio station, actually, WSBF. And we were formed a band, and the rest of it, it used to be called the O'Neills, and then it became Sunbrain. But...
So, were you involved in the radio station at college? Because I was, and it was one of the best experiences I had.
Yeah, it was the only place to go, because it's kind of a conservative university, and it was. I wasn't interested in fraternities, but it was kind of like the natural gravitation to the radio station, because that's where everybody kind of ended up. That wasn't part of the Greek scene, and we all liked music, and that was like our own little fraternity, I guess, without any fraternity dues, just people there because they wanted to be there, and... They weren't. It was nice. It was.
So what
it was awesome.
So what kind of shows were you playing with Sunbrain? Was it like small clubs, house parties?
Well, Sunbrain was small clubs, but we would throw shows. They didn't let us play at the university at the bars in town because they wanted cover bands. They wanted like Eagles and Van Halen, and so we would put on house parties at we'd have shows at our house, and our other friends would have shows at their house, and like get kegs of beer, and we'd actually sell our parking spots by our house for the football people, then take that money and buy beer and kegs, and then charge people to get into the beer, $5 each to get unlimited beer. And then we'd have the bands play, and then they donate to the band. So we'd actually like have some pretty big parties.
The classic punk show.
Awesome amounts of beer and people and money to even pay the rent,
Oh, man.
Yeah, it was good.
So did that band do any touring? Did it get really outside of South Carolina?
We were stoked. We went to Florida a couple times, and we went to New York City, and then we went all the way to Omaha, Nebraska. But we didn't get to see the whole country, but that was exciting as, young people getting to see that much of the country.
And here is Pressure Face by Sunbrain. Another thing that you were kind of known for in the 90s was being part of This Bike Is a Pipe Bomb, and pretty legendary in terms of folk punk, really influential on a lot of kids. Can you tell us a little about joining that band and your time in it?
When Sunbrain dissolved after three records, we broke up, and I wanted to keep doing music. So one of the reasons I went to Pensacola was because it was like one of the few places where people knew of my music, and I knew some musicians down there that could form a pretty good band, like the Flatwheelers. I was in a band called the Flatwheelers, and somehow I finagled my way into inheriting the Sunbrain van, so that gave me a little bit more clout. So I was like, somehow I convinced Terry and Ryan Modi to let me be in the band because I had a van, and I'm like, hey, I could drive, I could take the band on tour. So I think that was part of the reason why they let me in, because I had a van that I could contributor to the.
Here is the legendary folk punk jam, This Is What I Want, by This Bike Is a Pipe Bomb.
For a couple years.
And so they used to tour a lot. Talk a little bit about touring in the 90s. Obviously, it's a totally different beast today.
Well, it was a whole different thing, because you used to have to send out cassettes in the mail, first of all, and then wait the few, however long it took for the promoters to get the cassettes, you know, and then however long it took for them to listen to it, and then you'd have to rack up a huge debt in long-distance phone calls. So you'd, you know, call them and then miss them. You had to call them during their booking hours. And so a lot of times flakiness occurs, you know, I'll try again next week, you know. And so it was really a challenge to book tours. But then our friend Flexo the Rubber Boy developed a device that he bought parts from Radio Shack.
And
it was the dialer that you go to the payphone and you could, you know, type in the tone, and it would like unlimited long distance for free.
Yes.
You know, so we could start booking the tours using that device.
I've heard about these in old interviews,
and it was awesome.
It's something I never like would have thought of, being someone who was in a band that toured in the 2000s and in the last couple of years. Being able to get free phone calls was a huge
deal. That was a massive deal, because to book a tour back then could cost like $600 in long distance fees.
Oh my God.
You know, and you'd be like, oh man, starting off in the hole, you know, and everybody would be like stressed out. And
so how'd you guys find out about those places to book? Because obviously you've got to know other bands who've been there before.
Well,
you know?
Luckily through getting involved with This Bike as a Pipe Bomb, the reason I was able to kind of connect with the road was through them. And they initially started with connections through skateboarding, because Scott Stanton was initially in the band and he was a professional skateboarder. So they had that connection going on. And with the bike connection, do this bike as a pipe bomb. That kind of brought in kind of a BMX interest into that band.
Yeah.
And so it was like not only the skateboarding, but the BMX kind of crowd was kind of into that. I don't know if it was from the name, but then play punk rock places. And so it all kind of fit and it made it easier to connect with bookings, I think. So for them, that was a catalyst made the boat float a little easier through those things.
Definitely. By the end of the 90s, you were starting to put out solo records, and now you tour on your own. You're kind of like well known for being the guy alone in his car, just going around the country. How'd you become that guy?
Well, I started, had been the whole time writing songs while I was with this bike's pipe bomb, and I wanted to do them. And I had a lot of material, so I was like, I want to put out a record. And luckily, I found a job actually working at this spring break thing in Panama City at this college bar trying to get people to sign up for Marlboro cigarettes. And I made this like stack of cash in a week, enough to put out pay for half of my first record. I actually did put the parquet floor in the studio to pay for part of it, like work trade. And that's how the Pity Party came out, was through trading carpentry for studio time and also working this stupid job at Panama City Beach for spring break.
So what kind of changed when you started hitting the road on your own?
What kind of changed? Well, I mean,
there's a camaraderie to being in a van with many people, and there's also something really nice about being alone and being able to not have to adhere to anyone else's schedule.
Well, it's pretty meditative, and it is addictive to be alone and to be able to go whenever you want to go and go wherever you want to go and stay where you want to stay and eat where you want to eat. And it's a pretty selfish way to travel, I would say, but it is addictive going that way. And I prefer it, honestly, unless I'm with really good friends that I like to travel with. But sometimes you get with folks you don't really get along with, and then it's really hard. And I've had that happen. I've had it happen both ways, and it's, you know, but I still love it any way you cut it, you know.
Awesome. So how did your connection with Omaha begin? You've played with a lot of people. You've opened for a lot of like big name people who are like very well known for being from Omaha.
Well, I guess it started with way back when we Sunbrain toured with Mousetrap. We were label mates on Grass Records, and Mousetrap was our introduction to Omaha. And I think because Grass Records sent our albums to Dave Sink, I think at the Antiquarium Record Store, he played them for people like Ted Stevens from Cursive.
Oh.
And Connor Oberst heard them through that, I think. But I feel as if it was Ted Stevens who was the first to contact our guitar player Russ and somehow arrange for a show in Omaha. I think that's how it happened. And that's back when he was with what's the name of the band? Polecat. Ted was in a band called Polecat.
Yes, yeah, you hear about them in like early Saddle Creek history stuff.
Yeah, so they were awesome, and so we went and we got to meet them and play in Omaha, and that's how that started. And then in that time frame, we met all kinds of folks from Omaha and developed a connection.
That's awesome. There. So you released a ton of different records on a lot of different labels. In 2013, you did a Kickstarter for your album, and you went fully independent for it. The next record came out on a record label started specifically for releasing your album. How has label relationships worked out for you in the past? You seem to have bounced around a lot, but you do have that very independent spirit.
Well, labels, it's hard because it's almost like, well, labels like giving a musician a loan. Because what they do is they give you money to put out your record, and if the record doesn't do well, then the loan doesn't get paid off, and that's creates problems, or it creates unhappy feelings, yeah. Obviously. Sometimes things just, a lot of times, especially in my records, don't really sell very well, so there's been a lot of that, and I've, made some over... maybe spend too much on a record and then end up in the hole and it doesn't do well and then people lose money and it's hard. You got to be wise about how you spend with your recordings and
most definitely. Yeah, back in 2013, you said that it's almost too late to turn back. So have you picked up any new skills? Are you really, like, still all in on the music? Because it seems like you've been getting a lot more interest lately. You're working with, you know, people who really want to, like, promote your music, which is awesome.
What? I don't believe I'll turn back. I mean, I really love to do it, and it's I've got a batch of new songs I couldn't help but write, and it seemed I can't help but keep writing them, and I feel like, oh man, I'll stop as soon as this next one's done, and but then it's like more songs. It's kind of like you're living, and it's just what I do. You know, I kind of reflect what I've been seeing and put it into verse.
Most definitely. I'm sure with everything that's been going on in America since the election of Donald Trump, that provides a lot of, you know, inspiration, I guess, or
absolutely
a drive to, like, communicate with people.
Yeah, and just speak up about it and talk about it, like, loudly and openly on through microphones.
Yeah.
like, don't be shy. Like, get up and voice it, man. I think, you know, a lot of people are holding back and fearful or something, their tongues are going to get cut out by the fascists, but which could happen, who knows, but willing to take that risk, you know.
Definitely. Here is "The Stars Are My Chandelier" by David Don Darrow.
Love her twice as much as all other is and more. I could say my love is bigger than the Big Apple. Like Oxyfan, a beat is on in the Scrabble. Just like the stars in my chandelier. Just like these landscapes are my living room. Just like the highways are veins. I am the blood, I am the in 27 straight rows. Saw the trees becoming lovers in the shadows. Heard the crickets overpowered every radio. Heard the sound of the silence kill my ego. Kill your ego. Kill all ego. And all the stars were our chandelier. And all these landscapes were our living rooms. And all these highways our veins. We are the blood, we are the rain. And you, you're heaven to hold, will never get old. You're heaven to hold. Honey, you're heaven to hold.
About food and drinks and
all my
snacks.
Stuff.
So, do you have a dietary restrictions? Are you vegetarian, vegan?
No, I was vegan for a couple years, and then I became vegetarian, then pescatarian, and then 9/11 happened, and the promoter went and got a bunch of T-bone steaks.
Oh my gosh!
I was in Seattle, and then he was like, I was on tour 9/11. And when it happened, and the promoter was, the show got canceled, so he was like, I'm going to go get some steaks. So he went and got some steaks and cooked them up, and I was like, all right, I'll take the steak. I didn't want to be like, no, I'm not going to eat the steak on 9/11. So I ate it, and I have been eating some meat ever since. And I try to keep it clean, though, you know.
So back in the old days on tour in, like, the 90s, were you guys doing anything, you know, shifty for foreign food on tour? I know
Well, we did a lot of dumpster diving, you know. We would dumpster dive Whole Foods dumpster or Wild Oats in the Midwest.
Wild Oats, yes.
We would do health food store dumpster
health
diving.
Food stores.
And I remember the Adwala juice dumpster in Minneapolis.
My gosh.
That was a good one because it had the frozen, especially in winter, because all the juice would be frozen,
yes,
in the dumpster. And it's still good juice, but it would be, you know, like get a case of that and like let it thaw out in the van. And then there's the bagel places that were always good,
yes,
for dumpster diving.
Mm-hmm.
Donut shops are good for dumpster diving. And then people start locking the dumpsters, you know, because they don't want to, mm-hmm, want you to get it, that good fresh food that they're throwing away.
Oh yeah.
You know, or whatever packaged, at the time we were vegan and vegetarian, so we'd eat a lot of those packaged vegan fake meats that were vacuum packed that they'd throw away into the dumpster.
Yeah, because no one was buying them. It wasn't trendy back then.
And we would have those. And so there was a lot of plentiful food to be had, you know. And I remember those days.
So are there any particular regions of the country where you really love the food or you think it's like really special?
Man, it's so great. Like going through the Bay Area, just having the Mission Burrito, of course, and then you make your way down the coast.
Sorry, we had some technical difficulties here, but it's back.
Stand in a parking lot, you know, and then you go down to Southern California, and the Mexican food changes. You know, there's just more options as we get further south, and it's street tacos in L.A. and moving into the east, into the green chili zone of New Mexico,
green chilies.
And then the wonderful places that serve up these stews of green chili, and all throughout, all the way up to Denver, you know. And then,
oh yeah,
then you get Tex-Mex coming into Texas. I just love that stuff so much. And
I'm a West Coast boy. I love Mexican food. It comes up constantly in my interviews with people. And I don't know if you know about Del Taco, which is a Southern California regional fast food delicacy. That's my favorite. I ate it today. I eat it multiple times a week.
Yes.
This is a pro Del Taco podcast. We do not like Taco Bell.
I've had Del Taco, and I have had Del Taco, and I enjoy it. And I do have some guilty pleasures with Taco Bell, which I may have once or twice a year. But that's it. You know, I do remember when Jack in the Box had the TVP tacos back in the day. They were a vegan. They were fake meat. So it's like we would eat them as vegans.
So we were like, Jack
in the Box, yeah, let's go there.
Oh, man. Are there any particular fast food chains that you can only find in certain places that you really enjoy and you would recommend to people to check out?
Well, I like, you know, West Coast In-N-Out is pretty good.
Of course.
I'm trying to think of a Nor'easter one. You know, when you go to Wawa in the Northeast, I like how they do the pretzel sandwiches are pretty good.
Let's take a pause there. You know? This is an iconic question I ask everyone on the podcast. Wawa versus Sheetz.
Wawa.
Okay, I'm team Wawa as well. I mean, I understand some of the arguments for Sheetz, but yes, Wawa. Tell us about Wawa.
Wawa just seems a little more quality there going on. Maybe a few. I don't know if they have the volume of drink options as Sheetz, but maybe they do. I have never counted or really taken note, but the Wawa, the pretzel bread is, I like, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It's good in a pinch. Mm. And it reminds me a lot. Wawa reminds me always of Eric Peterson, who's now passed from Mischief Brew, because there was a Wawa just down around the corner from his house in Upper Darby, Pennsylvania. I would go in there whenever I stayed with them, him and his wife Denise. So we walk down and get a sandwich at the Wawa. So I like that, you know.
A classic. Yeah, I've got to get a hoagie. Yeah. So you're sober now, but of course you got to find alternatives. Are there any sparkling waters you're particularly into? Because I know I have my preferences.
I prefer San Pellegrino in the bottle, the big bottle.
But I
do like I know the LaCroix is very. It's a huge boom and a trend, but I love it. I love the grapefruit and the coconut. You know,
coconut? You like the coconut? Oh, my gosh.
The coconut's good. You know, some people like it.
It's
some
a rare opinion.
But I mix it up. I see other brands, and I try them as I roll around. Oh, but I will say, all this aside, my favorite of them all, I totally spaced on it, but Topo Chico is the top of the pops.
That is my favorite as well. I rep Topo Chico really hard.
Topo Chico, I almost named a record after it.
Really? Which record?
It was going to be Simple Love, but it was going to be Topo Chico because that was a sober recording. Like, we're like, let's not drink anything during the recording. And then we just drank Topo Chico the whole time.
It's the best. It's the absolute best. Yeah. Oh, I do love LaCroix, too. But,
I do, yeah.
Topo Chico's my favorite.
Topo Chico out of the glass bottle.
Gotta be glass bottle. Yeah. Gotta be. So you roll up to a gas station on tour. What are you looking for when you walk in?
You know, sometimes fresh chocolate chip cookie, local. If I'm in the Midwest, on occasion, the fresh cheese curds you'll find in Wisconsin when they're fresh batches of those baggies of homemade, you know, locally made cheese curds. I like those. And sometimes I'll go for those processed little sausages from different areas of the country, which, you know, come through in a pinch, you know, sometimes. I like to go, when I get to Minnesota, I like to get those old Dutch potato chips because they remind me of being a kid. Let me think of some other stuff. Yeah, it's just
I know when I was out in Pennsylvania on tour last summer, I was all about trying to find birch beer.
Oh, right.
And sarsaparilla. So good.
Or cheer wine down in Cheerwine, North Carolina. Yeah. You go down there and have a... Every now and again, I'll have a cheer wine.
Peach knee high, which you can kind of find in like the middle of the country.
Yeah.
So many good things. Do you have a particular style of pizza you like? Because when you tour around, you see that there's so many different styles of pizza in America.
I like New York-style pizza, like the thin crust. You know, there's a couple great slices. You know, well, there's outside of Hartford, Connecticut, there's, I forget the name, Joe Pepe's pizza.
Yes, yeah, they have a special,
best,
like...
One of the best in the world, I think.
They have, like, a special name for pizza in, like, Connecticut, and they do it in that, like, it's special style.
It's the best, I think. And then closest is Lombardi's in Little Italy, and then if you have a West Coast slice, I recommend Aaronel in San Francisco on Valencia Street, 16th and Valencia. They are very minimal ingredients, but some of the best. You get a little jalapeno pepper as a featured item on the slice at the Aaronel. Fantastic. But there is that deep dish. I'm not that into, but there is a place, you know, Al Scorch in Chicago, the great Al Scorch. Hmm. He will turn you on to some fine deep dish pizza if you ever go through Chicago. He took me to this one place, but I cannot remember. You'd have to ask Al, but it's near his home, and it's like full on, like legitimate deep dish Chicago pizza, you know.
So, are there any particular meals, thinking back on all your years of touring, is there anything that stands out really strong? It's like a particular meal you had on tour that was really great.
That's hard. There's so many of them. It continues. It's like, whoa, what is one of the best meals? Well, the first thing that comes to mind is at a place called the Frontier in Albuquerque.
Frontier Diner.
Where they make those homemade flour tortillas, and they have the green chili in the cauldron where you go in, and it's super cheap.
Yes.
We used to go in there and we get a bowl of that with those tortillas and dip them in there. You know, and that's really fantastic for a cheap fix of food and delicious, you know. And I always remember that place.
Frontier Diner's great. It still gets recommended by, like, touring musicians today to other touring musicians.
Yeah, yeah. That's definitely a crucial one. But, you know, on tour, the Grit in Athens is one vegetarian restaurant.
Athens, Georgia or Ohio?
Athens, Georgia. Okay. But, there's the Golden Bowl with the nutritional yeast gravy with the vegetable medley mixed in, brown rice. That's a really great, healthy dish, you know, tasty with the pita points. Get a side of the yeast gravy with extra pita points. And that's usually what I do every time for the last 20 years. I'll go in there and get that, you know.
Oh, that's sure. Classic.
Or go to Pensacola and go to Maria's Seafood right there on Highway 90. And Maria's Seafood, they got a steamer in there. You go get a pound of shrimp for something like $7.99 a pound, jumbo shrimp. And they'll ask you if you want the Cajun spice. And you just put the Cajun spice in the butter sauce. You get it and you eat them in the vacant house next door and throw the shells out to the stray cats. That's a good one.
That is awesome.
You know?
Wow, these are some great recommendations. I'd just like to thank you so much
for
talking with me. We got to cover so many cool things. I think people will really enjoy hearing about touring in the 90s, and people love food recommendations. We'll be making a big list of them.
Right on, yeah.
Hope you enjoy the rest of your tour.
I plan to. We're working our way into Arizona, which is...
And what are you going to get in Arizona?
That's tough, man. Well, Tucson, they used to have that place that served those giant... bowls of cereal, which I thought was cool. They'd give you a bowl of cereal if you could prove you were a touring musician. That place closed down. But we're going to Phoenix, so Phoenix can be, I don't know, I need a recommendation. Yeah. I've always had a hard time. But I like to go get those date shake, you know, date shake off the I-8. Mm-hmm. If you go heading from San Diego, that's nice stop, you know.
Something that might not be useful to you, but I always try and get when I'm in Arizona, is they have the QT gas stations, and they have this proprietary brand of energy drink called Rooster Booster, and they're in the small size Red Bull cans, but they wire you more than any Red Bull ever will, and they're called Rooster Booster. Yeah, they are out of control.
Oh, I wanted to mention can I mention the favorite snack?
Yeah.
The Casa de Fruta. If you're crossing over from the 101 across to the 5. There's that place that serves all the dry fruit, and they have the garlic encrusted pistachios, but they sell them out of the bins there. That is, I would say, my favorite number one snack when I go through.
Thank you so much, David.
Thank you.
Awesome. Well, I hope you enjoyed the conversation between David and I. It was so great to hear about touring in the 90s, and you can still check David out on tour today. His tour with Pedro the Lion is now over, but I'm sure he will be back out again soon. You could check out David's most recent record, Inside the Cat's Eye, over on Bandcamp or at his website, daviddondero.com. That's daviddondero, all one word, .com. All of his old albums are also up on Bandcamp, which you can check out at daviddondero1.bandcamp.com. Next week, we'll be talking with Tony Presley, aka Real Life Tigers, and one of the folks behind Keeled Scales Records. We also did a tailgate interview outside the Moroccan since he was doing merch for David on this tour. Me and Tony go all the way back to 2008, and we reflect on our musical connections and 2000s DIY touring culture. It's a trip down memory lane, y'all. Please remember to subscribe and share this episode with a friend. You can listen on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and SoundCloud. And as I said in the intro, we have social media and all that jazz, so go check it out. You can find us over on Facebook, or you can hit me up on Twitter at HeavySnackingPC. Questions, comments, concerns, suggestions, send me an email, heavysnackingpodcast@gmail.com. We're going to finish out this episode with two versions of the song that helped me discover David, called Less Than the Air. The one you're hearing right now is by Nana Grizzle. And right after, we'll hear David's version. Thanks, y'all.
My mental record starts to skip. An orange, a lemon, lime, and oh, a tangelo. On the coconut tree next to the mighty mango. Track. Happy right here, laying on my back. Let the train wheel come take my life.
Let the big steel make it alright, cause I got no friend to tell the trial. Lots of enemies so quick to defile. Suppose I'm drunk again, but I don't care. All I know is I'm less than the air. So let's not compare. Feeling sorry, are you? Feeling blue, are you? Down and out and overdue. Feeling crumpled up and dented in. Are you trapped within your very own skin? It's like a jail, you can't see the bars, can't escape it by bleeding through your scars. Self-deprecation is a boring hand, you're just bringing everyone down, man. Feeling sacrificed, you feeling slammed, are you? Claustrophobic on this open land. Feeling smothered by a deep blue sky. Does the sunset hurt your eye? Well, you're not the only one who got caught in the rain. This whole world don't revolve around your pain. You can go on now, spin out in misery. I'll take the sun and the sea. Well, sham shamming on, oh dip dee dip. While my mental record starts to skip. Orange, lemons, limes, and tangelos. See the coconut tree next to the mighty mango. The High Sierra is in my rear view mirror. Ain't it beauty? Beautiful, my lovely dear. We got time, so let's not abuse. Let's wear holes in our shoes.
Thank you for listening to the Heavy Snacking Podcast. Tune in next week and keep snacking.